Hi, George Wendt here.
Hi, I'm Poonam Patel.
Hi, I'm Mike Kaczynski.
Hey, this is Todd Stashwick.
Hi, I'm Mark Belchman.
Hi, I'm Antoine McKay.
This is Jeff Hoover.
Hey, this is Chris Redd.
This is Rachel Mason.
Oh, we are sand.
Hi, I'm Kevin Riom.
Hi, this is Jimmy Corain.
And this is Susan Messing.
This is Beth Stelling.
Hi, America. This is Lindsay Haley.
This is Michael Palstack.
Hi, this is Rick Bayless.
This is Tawny Newsom.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Sohn.
And I'm Ted Tremper.
I'm Jack Brownis.
Hi there, this is Mary Beth Monroe, and you are watching... Nope, you're not watching. You're listening. What's going on?
This is Stephanie McCullough. You are listening, watching, doing the Improv Nerd. You are having an Improv Nerd experience at this moment.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by the 6th Annual Dallas Comedy Festival. Now, there is only a few more days left to submit to the 6th Annual Dallas Comedy Festival. Submissions are open through January 4th, so you gotta act quickly. Submit your improv, your sketch, or your stand-up now. This festival is taking place March 25th through the 28th in beautiful Dallas, Texas. And it is a production of the Dallas Comedy House. So check out DallasComedyFestival.com. That's DallasComedyFestival.com to submit to the festival. And remember, giddy up, y'all. We're also sponsored by my award-winning improv classes here in Chicago, The Art of Slow Comedy. If you're looking for a new approach to your improvisation, or you're feeling frustrated because you want that personal attention you deserve, check out two great opportunities we have for you with The Art of Slow Comedy. On January 3rd, we have a two-person scene tune-up. So if you feel a little rusty and you want to start the year off right doing great two-person scenes, check out the two-person scene tune-up. Also, we have a six-week Fundamentals of Improv. That's Artist Low Comedy 1 starting January 7th. All you have to do is go to jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com for more information. I can't believe it. Another year has gone by. 2014 is almost over. 2015 is just on the horizon. We can touch it. It's so close. It's barely here. We've had a great season here at Improv Nerd. A great year, really. It's such great people. And every year, for the last two or three years, I believe, we've put together a panel of people to come and discuss their favorite moments of 2014. So we did things a little differently this year. As you know, Improv Nerd has become so big that the staff has become so big that we actually had to have a holiday party. And which means we ordered 4 pizzas and invited people over to our house for pizza and Coke and store-bought baked goods. And I'm really uncomfortable and kind of socially awkward in these situations until, of course, we get to the recording, the work part of it, because that's where I thrive, is the work part. So after we had the pizza and all that stuff, we recorded this episode. And so joining us will be Lauren Corain and Dan Schiffmacher, who is the producer, and Lauren, of course, who's been to almost all the shows. And we each pick out our 3 favorite moments. Now, we've added a little bonus material because of the party. Also joining us to tell us one of their favorite moments is Sam Bowers, who was the director of the last season of Improv Nerd, Chloe Fitzpatrick, who is my assistant, and Taylor Overstreet, who is the part of the street team. So that's kind of a little bonus thing. And then I asked them what I'm really like. So I think they were really accurate on what I'm really like. So here it is, the best of 2014 episode. Enjoy.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy's a nerd. Oh, yeah.
this we're sitting around here, this having pizza with the whole Improv Nerd staff. We've got a huge staff here, and this is our year-end review episode where we look back to our favorite moments of Improv Nerd for 2014. Joining me right now are two people who know most of the episodes from the inside out. Dan Schiffmacher, who is the producer of Improv Nerd, and he not only puts together the audio, but he also does the YouTube channel. And joining Dan is my wife, Lauren. Now, her official title used to be head of the interns, but she does so much more. She does marketing and PR, and she makes sure that when I do the live show that my shirt is tucked in and I'm wearing a belt. So how we like to do this episode is each one of you have selected three, including myself, of our favorite moments of Improv Nerd 2014. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start with you, Dan. And what is your first memorable moment of 2014?
Let's see. All right. One of the moments that comes to mind was like the end of our, I think the spring run was with Jeff Hoover.
Now, for people who don't know Jeff Hoover is a producer at the WGN Morning.
Yeah, I had no idea who he was.
You didn't?
Didn't know who he was. Okay. Most of, like a lot of the guys, I mean, I only moved to Chicago about a year and a half ago, so like a lot of the people that you put on, I don't know, but like they're always just really good, like guests. So I didn't know who he was, but like the whole show was just super entertaining. Like he just had a character on just the whole time. He was just like he kept going to the podcast about Korea and all that.
Now, but some of that stuff was a little politically incorrect, right?
Yeah.
Now, did you edit any of that out?
I think there was some things when he was calling out specific people
okay. That
we edited it out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We didn't want to make sure, but like, I don't know that I edited too much else besides that. I think mm-hmm. the Korean stuff. Which
and
is
what
kind of
what moment in particular of this episode?
My favorite moment was when he, like, it was time to do the improv scene, and he clearly didn't want to do it. So there's literally, like, he's like, all right, we're going to do improv now. And he's like, oh, really? That's it? Because I think he thought that the end of the show, like, that was it. It was like, we're improv, then it's over. Like, he didn't know that you guys would go back and talk. So, like, he just, like, I mean, it was like 6 or 7 minutes of just him stalling to not do an improv scene. He goes into this whole rant about his family and about he like sharded himself. It's like this whole thing, and he I don't know.
Let's play it now.
Yeah, let's just listen to it. It's a little
improvise now.
Oh, we are.
Yes, we are.
I didn't get to tell you all the how I was abused and
how were you abused?
Let me count the ways. No, are we leaving anything out? I feel bad.
Well, we're going to come
back.
Can
I tell you how funny my mom and dad are and
sure.
how much I love
yeah.
everyone that's here today?
Yeah. Your dad was a Marine.
Oh, I haven't done this in like 20 years.
Improvise.
And how I'm very self-conscious of failing in front of people. And
but can
how
I just
expect several standing ovations.
Right. Can I just say
and
this?
How David Koechner maybe turn off the podcast because he got so inside. I mean, a lot of you. God bless David Koechner, and I hope he hears this, because I think he's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But I signed on to do this without knowing there was an improvised scene to end it. I thought, I was just uncomfortable doing an interview, let alone when I got back and then read up on Jimmy and the show. Every show ends with an improvised scene with a guest. I'm like, mother, are you shitting me? So I do my research, I get on the YouTube, that YouTube thing mm-hmm. that the Koreans invented.
Yeah.
And I watch a little bit of it. And he's sitting here like I am, and he's like, where do we get our characters? We can get our characters everywhere. Anywhere, right? We can get them from a kitchen drawer. What do you see in a kitchen drawer? A knife. What are knives? Knives are sharp. Knives are shiny. I'm like, motherfucker, what am I doing?
The thing that was interesting, and you said that, you know, he didn't think he was going to improvise.
Yeah.
He knew that he was going to improvise because we actually had gone to the WGN Morning News studio,
yeah.
and we did like a...
We practiced with him.
Lauren.
Okay.
We practiced with him.
Like 2 days
And
before.
He was totally nervous. And I thought he really rose to the occasion.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he had not improvised in like a really long time.
Yeah, okay. But he did good, yeah. I mean, like he was... It was just funny how it was like clear that he was stalling and stuff like that, and even at the end when he like before you guys started in front of him, like he left the scene and was like talking to the audience and stuff. It was just really entertaining and really funny, I thought. That was one of my moments.
Let's go to you, Lauren. Your first memorable moment of 2014 from Improv Nerd.
Well, one that I really liked was the entire episode with Stephanie McCullough.
You love music, musical theater, and stuff like that.
I am a musical theater geek, mm-hmm. Yes. So I've really enjoyed all of the musical theater episodes that you've done. But this one in particular was just great. She was amazing. And one part that I really liked was she said to sing, you know, to sing in musical improv, all you have to do is take a regular line and sing it. And I never knew that. I mean, I never really thought of it like that. And yeah. She just had you sing dialogue at the piano. And I remember when we came home that night and the next day, I was just doing that. I was just singing everything I was talking. So it was great.
So here's that clip right now.
'Cause you just need to say the thing you want to say.
I've really enjoyed about this season is when people push me a little out of my comfort zone. It really helps me become a better improviser. So we're going to go to my pick. And I know it's probably going to surprise you guys, but I love it when people are honest and they reveal stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking about Lindsay Haley. And I think I revealed on this episode with Lindsay that I also had been sexually abused. And she talked about it. And I really think... What I like about it is I really think improv is a personal art form. So whatever happens in your life, mm-hmm. your life experience affects you on stage. And I think it was really brave of her to say that. And I just really appreciated her honesty. And here it is.
Okay. I'm going to do this right here right
yes.
now. I remembered some repressed memories from my childhood about being a victim of sexual abuse. And, you know, my immediate family could not be more perfect, mm-hmm. could not be more perfect. So I always wondered why there was this sort of deep-seated pain that I had or this thing that was coming out of me, you know, and the self-righteousness and stuff. And that occurrence didn't even really happen while I was touring with the Second City. It was a little bit after that, too. But I think it was all right around in that area.
How did it come back to you?
The person passed away, and... Right after they died, I started remembering things.
Because I also had been sexually abused. And mine was a school teacher.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, it's a scar that... It's a scar that you always live with, you
yes.
know? Do you know... Who was the person?
I shouldn't say at this time, just because I also haven't revealed that to mm-hmm. certain members of my family.
Was it, without revealing the person, was it inside the family?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
Okay. And so how have you been able to deal with it?
I personally, well, I now know, too, that that was what my illness was. We had talked about, too. Like, in 2006 or 7, I started to get really, really ill. And I know, I believe that that was my body telling me that there's some big thing coming up that I needed to kind of, like, work through and deal with. Stress-related illness, you know, which I think manifests itself in the form of cancer for some people, and for me, adrenal fatigue syndrome, which was giving me all these food allergy reactions and these different sensitivities to everything and around me.
Were you guys at that show?
I wasn't.
Oh, my God, I was.
And how did you take that?
It was intense. Mm-hmm. It was intense. I really wanted to kind of leave the room. It was so intense. But in retrospect, it was very memorable. And I agree with what you said. She was very, very brave.
Do you think that most people on who consider coming to the show are, like, they know that at some point they're going to probably talk about some
You mean the guests?
Yeah, the guests. Like you think that they know that, like, if there's some sort of something that's happened, they're going
to
know that maybe
I think if they've listened to the podcast, they know that. But if they haven't listened to the podcast, they usually have no idea.
Yeah.
I also think Jimmy, as we've gone along, has gotten a little easier on people.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think that was getting in my way. Like, I was coming from the point of view of, like, if I get someone to reveal something, I've done my job. And yeah. I think I've had to let that go. And thank God, because I think the shows have become better because of it. Let's go to you, Lauren, for your second favorite moment of 2014.
Oh.
I love the dramatic weight I'm giving this.
The Jay Succo episode.
What did you love about that?
What a fantastic guy. First of all, the room was filled with people who just loved him. And he exudes joy. But
much like me.
Yeah.
Much like you, Jimmy. Yeah. So the particular moment I loved from that show was, this was actually in the question and answer portion of the show. And somebody asked him, you know, if you're having something bad happens to you during the day, you get rejected or something, and then you have to perform that night, how do you overcome that or deal with it? And he talked about how important it is to have people surround yourself with people who love you.
So let's play that clip right now.
For me, it's you have to surround yourself with people you choose to play with who give you love. And then with that, you have to then allow yourself those moments to be like, I'm improvising and I'm not feeling well, so why don't we just deal with that? Like my friend Bill, we did a two-person show, and he was like maybe 21, and his parents were from St. Louis, and they drove up the first time they were ever going to see him perform. And it was at Victory Gardens, what used to be Victory Gardens, uh-huh. which is Greenhouse.
Yes,
on Lincoln in Chicago. They drove around the block a couple times, couldn't find parking, and then went to the hotel. And so what we did is dealt with it in the show. And we played honest and true. And that's why I'm like, this is theater, man. We could say things with what we do. So either bring it on stage with you, but more importantly than that, surround yourself with the people who get you. Choose the people you play with. Let your group allow you to explore that stuff, because that's when the biggest gold is, man, is when you can do that stuff. And then give yourself a break. Be like, yep, I'm having a bad day. My therapist, Ron Crouch, who I quote all the time, says, if you're depressed, be the best depressed you can be. And I hated that for years, and then I'm like, oh, I get it now, I can't change it. I have to sit through this emotion. And if I feel so bad, then I just remove myself. But it's amazing what a group of friends and supportive people will do, which is all we have to do in improv is support. Then they'll allow you to explore those, man. But it's okay to take a step back. It's okay to leave, you know, but it's also okay to deal with it.
What do you do, Dan, as an improviser here in Chicago when you haven't had a good day and you have to go up and improvise?
Well, I mean, I actually have a story. Okay.
What's the story?
I'll use whatever I'm doing, like, in it. Like, okay, so there was, like, literally during I had a breakup, you know, and
we're well aware of that.
Yeah,
Dan.
Yeah.
You took it. It was a hard breakup.
It wasn't fun. But what made it even because like it was like breakup had a Wednesday, and then I was on an OGM team, one group mine team, so we had a show the next day, and so that was right around the time when the glass floor had a crack in it or something. So that's what we got as a suggestion. So one of the guys who came out, I was in the first scene. One of the guys came out didn't know anything. No one really, they didn't know. Some of them knew, some of them didn't. But he initially starts a breakup scene. But based off of, you know, like, and it was just like, he was hitting every note. Like, you know, like, oh, we've been together for so long, and how can we commit, and like, all this other stuff. And it was, I just embraced that. And like, the whole show, that was my character throughout. There was a scene where these two guys were trying to get, like, into Wrigley Field. Just other two guys, different scene. Trying to get Wrigley Field, trying to get tickets. And I just, like, sadly walked on. I was like, here. Take my tickets. I'm not going to use them. And they're like, oh, really? Really? We don't, like, we're trying to react. I'm like, yeah, I don't give a shit. And I just walked right off. Like, I just played that the whole show. And I think I'd like to go see it at some, just watch the show over again to see how that was. But, like, I think, I feel like we're similar in that sense. Like, I'll embrace the kind of darkness and whatever because, like.
Did you feel better after it? Was it any therapeutic value to it?
I think it did. During the show, I you know, even that first scene, I got to say a lot that I, you know, like
that
I was
you wanted to say to
like
her.
Like I was talking to her, yeah. And it just, and, you know, like they could just tell, like everybody on the side were just like, they knew like that I was just actually acting truth. That's just how I was, you know? I totally use stuff. If something happens, just, I don't shrug it off. I'll put it into the show.
Great. Let's go to your second moment.
Favorite moment. I enjoyed Susan Messing interviewing
you. What did you enjoy? The episode where Susan, we turn the tables and Susan interviews me. What did you like about that episode?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of things. Like, she just, it was really interesting to see you in the passenger seat, so to speak. And
what did you observe?
I observed how you listened to Susan, how you just kind of, you answered truthfully too, like, you know, just instead of like coming up with questions and kind of thing, being progressing the show forward, you're just speaking honestly. And one of the things that I liked a lot, and I think, and I feel like it's since that episode, like, because you had a Facebook presence that was pretty memorable to a lot of people, to say the least. And like, you know, like whenever I would say, you know, I do this stuff for the Improv Nerd, and like, what is the Facebook box? You know, and so like pretty much Susan said everything that, that you know.
You checked out my Facebook posts?
Oh, I mean, I would get them. I didn't hide them or anything. So I saw them, and like I was like, I'm not gonna, you know, I've seen some.
So people were giving you shit about my Facebook posts?
They were giving me shit, but like whenever they find out, like, you know, if you know that I worked for you and I did some stuff for you, that they would ask me like, is he like, you know, kind of like what Susan's like, is he okay? What's, you know,
like they
he's great,
I was suicidal,
but like, he's,
like I was going to kill myself.
Not like that, but just like, man, this is some information I didn't need to know, you know, kind of thing. You know, just some of the things you're posting and stuff. So, but she pretty much said everything, you know, like just kind of how she, you know, based on that one.
So let's play a clip now.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me just say today's post, and I only say this because this was for everyone.
Right.
yours says, I wish I could enjoy more. It is so hard for me. May 2nd, you had written, when am I going to be recognized for my brilliance? April 28th was, to serve you better on Facebook, we loved your input. We find Jimmy's posts to be A, way too revealing. B, we don't know if he is kidding or not. C, we worried about Jimmy. We think he might be suffering from some sort of breakdown and in the process ruining whatever reputation he has left. D, finding them more disturbing than funny. Or E, other. Now, Jimmy, you're writing these posts.
Yes.
So I'm wondering what the intention of this was, because I will tell you, I've had a friend contacted me from New York who thought that, what did she call it? She called it digital media performance art. And she said he it almost felt like a great performance artist like a Spalding Gray or an Eric Bogosian. On the opposite spectrum, I have had people from all over the country contact me and say, is Jimmy okay?
And now, you are not the first person.
No shit.
To do that.
That's why you went A through E, Jimmy.
Right,
the whole thing here.
Sure.
So I'm wondering how much of this is this and how much should be put into your new goddamn show, which is everybody's begging you to write.
Right, right. And my wife, Lauren, said that. She said, you know, I wish you would take your energy that you're putting on Facebook
yes.
and do it in a one-man show.
Yes.
I think there's something interesting about this, and I don't know what it is. And to answer your question, I would say probably 60% is persona. There's a lot of truth in there. There's a lot of bits in there as well. You know, I want a book deal.
Right.
Brilliance coming soon. It's kind of like...
I've wasted half of my life trying to be famous. Yeah.
Yes, that stuff one. Like that. Yeah. You know, Facebook is my real friend. Things
yeah.
like that.
Now, for the people who don't know you, how does that translate in a way that they would understand as comedy?
You know...
You see what I'm saying?
And Lauren, you had to live with me as I was doing the Facebook post, and you didn't like them either.
Oh, my God. It's a miracle we stayed together through that whole thing.
Are you serious?
Yes.
What didn't you like about them?
Oh, you were just pushing people's buttons just for the sake of pushing people's buttons, I think. I'm really grateful that your therapist told you to stop. Thank you, Dr. Roth.
And
yeah.
I just want to add to this. So I was doing this, and I don't know if it was the right thing to stop or not. Certainly for my marriage it was, but... and my friends, but I remember there was people, we were getting, like, my brother would say stuff, and people would call him, just like people were coming to you, Dan, and people would say stuff to Lauren, and it was very interesting because I would go into the group therapy and talk about it, and then one day he goes, because I would spend a lot of time on these, and he goes, are you getting paid for this? And I said, no. And when he said that, like, this light bulb went on. It's like, why do it?
Yeah,
you know? If I'm not getting paid for it, I enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
And I was surprised and shocked to some of the reactions that people said. No one ever came directly. It was always somebody said something.
Heard something. Yeah.
So, but...
I just want to say thank God for Susan Messing and thank God for your therapist.
Well, it was... I think it was interesting. She made a point when in her thing was like... you know, I understand you were trying to, like, maybe this kind of Colbert kind of persona thing, but, like, her thing was, like, how did people who don't know you, how do they know that's what you're doing, you know? I thought that was a pretty good point that she made, too. I was like, oh, well, I guess they don't. They just kind of think, you know, this, you know, one way or another.
But I got to tell you, for a lot of things that I've done, I've never gotten that much attention.
Yeah,
It's interesting. Okay. So my second most memorable moment has to be with Chris Redd, because he was so honest about his background, about growing up, and our cat is here. Our cat Coco is joining. She's biting on her cord. Now she's going.
Okay, we're good. Keep going.
She's got an episode, too, and she'll reveal it at the end of the episode.
The improv nerd cat episode.
But the thing I loved about him, he was honest about how he grew up, about avoiding a gang, but then he was honest about race. And we talked about, how white people sometimes play this certain way when an African American or a black person in the scene, and I believe we repeated it, right?
Yeah, and
And I love that part of it, and I don't know if we're going to get to this because we're only playing clips, but let's just play this.
A black character. Doesn't
I was
have
playing
to
a black
that word. Though.
Right. Okay. You know but what I mean? Was playing a black woman. It was in the script.
Jesus.
Yeah. You know.
That sounds awful, dude.
Yeah.
I just feel like they could have just got a black woman to play this role. Wait. So this was.
So Tim did his. It was his life, and so we all played multiple characters.
Right.
We,
and there was like no black people.
There was no black people.
First mistake.
Okay.
No. But that it happens. So, and you had to play a black woman.
Yes.
And what was the reason she said it?
It was just in the I don't even remember. It was like a response to what he was saying or something.
I would probably have a problem with it. Okay. Would I hate you forever? No. But that night, we would have, I'd be like, that was unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Me, how I deal with it, I just say my bold statements, like, that was some bullshit. Y'all should have just had it. Even if you just had a black guy, as soon as you came up to the word, nigga. So just so you know. I've had that in shows happen, too. Like, and it's a fun little thing, you know what I mean? Because if it has a point. But, like, when improvisers go up and they're, like, being a black character or being a black woman, and feel like to play a black man or black woman, you have to say nigga is, like, crazy to me, and that's offensive as hell. If there's a purpose to it, you know what I mean? And no one's perfect. So I use it But I just feel like it's a word that I could use and y'all can't, and y'all should get over it.
What do you feel about white improvisers playing black characters?
It's cool as long as you can do it and have a point. I'll play a white character or any other race, I guess, but like, if you have a point, you know, and you're really genuinely doing it from a place of like, this is the art form taking on this character, like you would do any other character if you're giving that much commitment. But if you're just doing it to make fun of something, I don't know. Again, like, I make fun of people all the time, so I don't really know, you know, if I'm the best person to like sit up here and be a spokesperson for it. But it's just like, playing a black character is more than like, yo, this, that shit's annoying as fuck. You know what I mean? Like, we don't all walk around like Muppets and just like, you know what I mean, do this shit and all that shit, or like the Cleveland Show neck thing. Like, I hate that type of shit, you know? It's just like, there's stereotypes to everything. So if you're going to play a black character, play him. Play him the way Robert Downey Jr. played him. Make him funny as hell. You know what I mean?
And like Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, and commit to it.
And you weren't offended by that at all?
No, not at all. I thought that was hilarious.
but there's some black comics that will be offended by that.
There's
right?
gonna be black people, any people, offended with anything ever, right? There's always gonna be somebody offended by something.
Except Tyler Perry.
Tyler Perry is too rich to give a fuck about any of y'all.
I love that episode, and I loved how honest he was. It was great. What'd you guys think of that episode?
It was really cool to hear his story about, you know, where he's, and like, I mean, how, what he's gone through and all that stuff, and to just be, you know, doing improv and comedy and really just shows that, like, if that's, like, I think he said something about getting a second chance, you know, and that's something that he got and he went with, and it's really cool that, it was definitely different than most episodes, but I really liked it, and like, you guys redoing the scene over, it was a completely different, you know, thing too. So I thought that was pretty cool too.
I just like an honest discussion about race and comedy, because I think improv is so, you know, white.
A bunch of white people, plaid shirts, beards.
Yeah. Right. And yes. Yeah. All right. So let's go to your third moment.
Third moment. Okay.
Third favorite moment of 2014.
Okay. Third favorite moment was Dave Koechner. When we did it at Columbia,
yeah.
And actually, I think doing the whole stall thing, I think Jeff Hoover talks a little bit about this too, because he was intimidated. But Dave, like, after you guys did your scene, he talks about like taking objects and using them as part of your inspiration for a person. And then you guys do like just different really quick bits of like, all right, here's a knife, you know, and what is it we can do with this? So
let's play
it
now.
Yeah, let's play it. Yeah, yeah.
You can also come in, if you're a little worried about what you're going to do, you can divine something from a kitchen. What's in a kitchen? There's a blender, there's a mixer, there's a fork, there's a knife, there's a drawer. You can play any one of those things improvisationally, I will argue, okay? So you can use that as an archetype for you to deliver to the scene. Okay, say if I'm a knife, all right? What's a knife? What are its properties? Sharp, okay? So, let's do the same thing. Plate's clean.
Great, thanks.
You're welcome.
I'm working the floor, so...
Yep.
Well, so...
Always on that floor.
Yeah, great. So,
all best man on the floor.
Yes, yes. So...
You're on that floor, people snap, too.
Yeah, they do. So... Yep. Mm-hmm, great. So... You did the plate. You got.
Did it twice. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. Great. And
I know you like it twice.
I do like it twice. I really
plates
do.
Plates are clean.
Yeah, it's great.
Do you see that difference? So that's my interpretation of sharp, right? Now you can also play sharp as witty, or what? Let's do a knife. It can also be what? What's another property of knife?
Dangerous.
Shiny. Great. Let's be dangerous and shiny. Plates done.
Yeah, great. Just put it over there.
Okay.
Yeah.
This plate over here?
Yeah, just put it over there.
Yeah.
No. You know what? You're done for the day, okay?
I'd rather stay.
No, please. Probably a good idea.
I'd rather.
Yeah. Stay. Yeah, no, you know...
You sure this plate's clean?
It's spotless. I've never seen a cleaner plate in my life. Just...
I cleaned it twice.
I know. So, yeah, you can go. I'll punch out for you.
Punch out?
Yeah, punch out.
You go ahead and punch out.
What do you mean by that?
I don't know. Why don't you
walk over there.
I'm not going over there alone. I'm not going to turn my back on you.
Don't want you back over there.
Yeah.
And punch me out. And then I will punch you out.
Okay.
So, do you see the difference? So you can take a property of anything, right? And use it.
It's still a really cool thing to think of and learn.
Lauren, your final moment of 2014.
Wow. I'm going to have to go with Jeff Garlin as my all-time favorite episode from this past year. That guy does not give a shit about what anybody thinks. And it's so refreshing and awesome, you know?
Especially because, and I've said this in the podcast before, here's this guy who's in Los Angeles. And, you know, in L.A., you got to really be concerned what you say and stuff like that. He talked about, like, Julia Roberts. Like, I mean, he wasn't afraid of anything.
Let's play the clip.
Let's play it.
It's none of my business what people think of me.
Now, you say that, but what do you really mean by that?
I mean, it's none of my business. Think of me what you want to think. Because the only business that I have is what I think of me. And I, you know what I really am concerned with is what my boys, my sons, think of me. That means a lot to me. Other than that, I don't give a shit.
Because, I mean, even like when Conan was kicked off the Tonight Show, you said, I'm not going to do the Tonight Show.
Yes.
Now, to me, that is a really bold move.
Yes. It is, because I think the only two people who said that were myself and Tom Hanks. One of us had a lot more to lose. But to be honest, I don't give a shit. The Tonight Show, since Johnny Carson stopped hosting The Tonight Show, it doesn't make or break a career. A movie doesn't open big. You never hear, oh, the movie opened big because he promoted it on The Tonight Show. You know, so it's bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's just noise. So the only shows I want to go on are somebody like Jon Stewart or Conan, who I think are funny and interesting. Otherwise, I don't want to go on these stupid shows.
But even, you know, I was listening to your interview on Howard Stern, which was great, and I'd never heard the story about Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah. Can I do a short version?
Yes. Yeah, please, yes.
I did a movie with her, a Steven Soderbergh movie. She was mean to me from the get-go. I told her to go fuck herself. She ended up liking me, but too late. And then was doing publicity. One time somebody asked me about it. I talked about it, and then she was in the same town as me. Long story short, my wife played a great practical joke on me. I thought Julia Roberts called my house, and she didn't. It was someone from Mad TV who did a great Julia Roberts. But I wasn't scared. I was like, well, fuck her. She did say that. As I'm listening to the message from the fake Julia Roberts. Well, she did all this stuff. So, you know, I just, yeah, it's a, whatever.
But here's the thing that I think is interesting is you're willing, Julia Roberts is an institution.
And yes.
Most actors would be afraid and wouldn't say anything about that.
Because, well, you know, the thing is, if you're being, who gives a shit what somebody is? If somebody treats you poorly. She treated me poorly. She was rude to me.
How was she
and
rude to you?
And I asked the other actors in the scene, was she? And they're like, yeah. And they investigated. And she said, yeah, she doesn't like me. She didn't know me. She just made a judgment. Then she liked me. But you know, as I said, fuck her. I don't care. What do I have to? I got nothing to lose.
Jeff is just a great guy. And Jeff, yeah. I mean, I've interviewed him many times. We go way back. And for a guy who's become so successful, it's just nice that he remembers I have a lot of appreciation for that.
Well, he just inspires me to be just more honest in my life. I mean, you know, be yourself.
Mm-hmm. He's just real relaxed, you know. I mean, even in the improv scene, just kind of, okay, what do you mean?
My third favorite moment has to be Dan Bacadal. Now, I've known Dan for a long time here in Chicago, and Dan is like a huge fan of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And like if I have an episode, I will call Dan up and I'll say, you know what, this guy, I don't know if I did a good job or not or whatever. He'll listen to the episode and then he'll text me and say, oh, you know what, you were right, or no, this, you know, it's just, it's so nice. Someone I respect so much and he's a fan of the show.
That's cool.
And it was it's clear on this episode he refers to episodes. He loves the show, you know. Yeah. And to have a peer love your show and listen to it and be a fan is just it's amazing. But I love when he talked about The Daily Show and how he his relationship with Jon Stewart. He was very honest. And the thing that I really appreciate was he wasn't sticking it on Jon. He was owning his part in it. So here it is.
Is Jon going to come by to say goodbye, to say thank you? I mean, like, I didn't think that was... And I'm not sure how I feel about it now, but back then I didn't think that that was me asking for a lot. I thought that was... I had a life here in Chicago that was turning around and looking pretty good, and I was... working, and I had people that I loved in a support network, and I picked that up and moved it to New York for you to do your show. And I know that you gave me a job, so there you go. You gave me this, I gave you that. You still have your job and your things. So you lost nothing, and now I have nothing. You're not even going to come by and say thank you. And she said, quote, look, Dan, the CEO doesn't come down to the mailroom to say goodbye to every guy that leaves. And I said, hey, fucking excuse me. I'm not a mailroom guy. We work together. You know the nature of a correspondent on that show is, yes, you are John's, you know, you're under John, obviously. It's not The Daily Show with Dan Back at all. It's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And then there's the correspondents, and they rotate constantly, you know. But we do work together, and I wrote a lot of stuff on that show and got zero credit for it. Know this, that when you watch a field piece, the words coming out of that correspondent's mouth are probably around 50 to 60% theirs, 10% John's, and that other 40% is some writers and producers and so forth, you know? But a lot of that is what's coming out of the improvised brain of the correspondent. Zero fucking credit for that. Fuck you. Now, this is where I went right back to the Second City thing where I went, who's advocating for me in this case to stick up for me to say, you know, this, you have some ownership here. Had no ownership. And I said, okay, well, do me a favor then. Tell him he's a coward. And she said, now, Dan. And I said, you're right. Tell him he's a little coward. And she said, Dan. And I said, you can go. And then she left. And then I packed up all my shit and I called my wife. And then I bought a pack of cigarettes because I hadn't smoked in like a year. And then I called Miles Straw. And I said, I'm moving to Los Angeles. Let's start working together again. We worked together out here forever. And he said, awesome. I can't wait till you get here. And I went home. I got the car. I picked up all my stuff. I brought it home. The next night, I came and did my last field piece. I went around the building and shook hands and said goodbye to everyone that was a friend or an advocate.
Now, when you tell me that story, sadness is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
What's sad about that for you?
Because Daddy didn't love me, you know? I mean, I hate to get... What is it, Freudian? Or, you know,
our audience will figure it out.
Therapeutic about it, but I mean, it's like that really was what it was. It was like, geez,
you wanted
dude.
His approval.
Of course, I wanted his approval. I mean, it's fucking, it's Santa Claus. You know, you work for Santa Claus. Everybody loves this.
You
guy,
think you know? I don't want to? I'm going to get into John's head. I don't care. You think he was capable of giving it to him?
No,
because
no,
I don't think I don't think he gave it to Colbert or Carell. Do you think he did?
No, not at all. Which is okay. I mean, I think I was accurate. I was just inappropriate. I think he's a coward, but it was inappropriate. It's not for me to say, you know? I mean,
have you talked to him since?
No. God, no.
Well, if you saw him, what would you say to him?
John, can I talk to you for a second? I just want to apologize for the things that I've said. I don't think I gave you my all when I was in your employ. And I wish I would have behaved differently, and I acted childishly on my way out, and I hope you can forgive me. And if I can make it right, I would love to. I understand if you can't do that.
I don't think you have to worry because John listens to it. And I think
I think he hears.
I can't say enough about that episode. And if you get a chance to go and listen to it, I think it's the one of the best that we've done. And he also talks about Second City and goes into detail about quitting and punching in a hole in the wall and stuff like that. And again, he's taking full responsibility for it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do a quick recap. First episode was?
Jeff Hoover.
Jeff Hoover, and that's episode 91, and Jeff talked about really quickly.
He was just stalling for...
We love that.
And it was just hilarious.
Okay, and Lauren, your first episode was?
Stephanie McCullough.
And she talked about music and improv, and that was episode 112, if you want to go back and check it out. Mine was Lindsay Haley, and she was revealing about being sexually abused. Love that. Love any sort of honesty because it helps me heal. Your second episode was?
It has to be Susan Messing.
Susan interviewing me, and yes, that was the whole Facebook intervention. Yep. That's episode 87. Lauren, yours was?
Jay Succo.
And Jay was talking about surrounding yourself with people you love. That was episode 106. Mine was Chris Redd, and he talked about avoiding a gang and race and comedy, and that's episode 110. And you ended with?
I ended with Dave Koechner.
And he talked about object work, and that was episode 85. And you ended with?
Jeff Garland.
Oh, my God, what an episode. I love that episode, and that was 106. So check that out. And mine was Dan Bacadol, and that was episode 77. He talked about The Daily Show and quitting Second City. So I want to end this with a couple other people that are here with us.
Yeah.
And I want to start with Sam Bowers and what his... Sam Bowers is the director of Improv Nerd here in Chicago, the live taping. So let's ask Sam what his favorite moment was of 2014.
My favorite moment from this season on Improv Nerd. One of the things I love about Improv Nerd is that most people who listen to it, it's a podcast, but we have a live audience. So there's visual stuff that happens that the at-home audience is unaware of. And there was no better example of this than in our Rachel Mason episode. Jimmy and Rachel got to the point where they were going to improvise. They got to the improv set. And Jimmy asked Rachel if there was anything she wanted to do. And Rachel sprung at the opportunity and she said, yes, I want to do a thing where we improvise completely in the dark, like it's a radio play. Up in the booth, I was not told that this was going to be the case before the show, so I immediately scrambled and went, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll just turn all the lights down. So Jimmy and Rachel start doing the improv set in the dark, but we forgot that we had a projector on projecting the Improv Nerd logo onto the backstage wall. So as soon as we went dark and the scene started, all we saw was this giant logo, like, plastering the faces of Jimmy and Rachel. So me and Brendan Price in the booth were scrambling to try to turn it off. But the projector was all the way in the theater, and our remote could not reach it from the booth. So Brennan and I scrambled and finally figured out that if we downloaded a picture of black, we Googled the word black screen and saved it to the computer desktop and then viewed the image full screen, that was the same as if we had turned the projector off. But it took us like 7 minutes to come to that conclusion. So the podcast audience at home does not realize that for the first 7 minutes of the In Dark radio play is actually with a giant blue screen over the faces of Jimmy and Rachel Mason.
Funny about that moment too is like I still recorded the video for that bat you guys did. And like the part where the blue is on, it's kind of a cool effect, but like there's like, you can see there's just the blue that's on you guys, and it's just like silhouette. It's kind of cool, but like that was a really different episode, I thought.
Yeah. And now let's ask Taylor Overstreet. She was part of our street team. What her most memorable moment was of 2014.
So one of my favorite moments of Improv Nerd, it was actually my very first episode. So this was my first season to be a part of the Improv Nerd team. And the first episode that I was able to attend the live performance was Mark Beltzman. One of the things I love most about the show is that you get to know the people as people, so it's not just about their path through improv and performance and writing, et cetera, but you really get to know about their lives. And I, 2 days before that episode, had decided to start doing daily meditation, and Mark Beltzman talked a lot about how he'd been, not lifelong, but pretty close to lifelong practitioner of meditation, and he told this story about his wife and he selling all their belongings and traveling the world for a year. And I think that it spoke to a belief that I have about one of the most important things you bring to the stage is your experience as a human on Earth. And so that really connected with me, and I loved that it was basically my first moment of being involved with the show.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right, and then let's go to Chloe Fitzpatrick. She is my assistant here at the Improv Nerd Corporation. Chloe, what was your most memorable moment?
I'm going to say a selfish moment was when I'm a big Broad City fan, and when Jimmy and I went down to Lincoln Hall to interview them, they were like super nice and super accommodating. And they had been late, so I think they were being extra accommodating. And they invited us to the show. Jimmy couldn't go. And I was like, it's sold out. Like, we can't go. And they were like, no, we can get you tickets. It's our show. And so I also remember that, like, Alana was like, I'll get you a plus one. And in my mind, I was like, I'm going to bring a date. And I, like, thought of a boy in my mind to bring. And that's what she said. She was like, then she made a joke about that I should bring someone I should bag. But then I brought my best friend from college, because when you get invited to a show about female friendship, you bring your best friend from college. You don't bring a boy. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that was, I didn't even know who Broad City was. Chloe said you got to do it, you got to do it. And then Lauren, you pushed too, right?
Well, I'm the one that got the interview. I mean,
right. I was totally resistant. And Chloe couldn't have been happier. And I felt like such a big deal when I'm like, yeah, Chloe, give her the comps. And, you know, it was great. It was great.
Do you guys have any honorable mentions at all?
Yes. You want an honorable mention?
I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
That Bob Odenkirk episode was really cool.
Oh, yes.
That was such a good, like, honest, heartfelt, you know, thing. And it's just like what he wrote in the back of your book and stuff like that. That was like, it was just a good interview altogether, you know?
Yeah, well, thank you. And it was a lot of fun. And I loved all his stories. And you know what I found interesting was when he was talking about Second City, and I almost felt the sense that he had regrets of doing it a little, you know?
Yeah.
And he wasn't treated very well there, you know? And I appreciate his honesty. Because it's, and I also like when he cleared up, you know, that the thing in Salon Magazine where he said about
just improv's too
big or something like that. And he really articulated it, which really is great. We're going to end this episode with asking you guys what Jimmy is really like.
Jimmy is a very talented performer. He's a great interview. Creatively, he's wonderful, but Jimmy gets so frustrated and discouraged by the smallest of things that don't concern him. They usually concern me. Like, if there's a technical problem as the director, I have to figure it out. And Jimmy will ask me how things are going, and I'll be like, oh, I have to figure this out. And he's like, oh, God, it's all ruined. Like, it's not going to work. And I'm like, no, it'll be fine. And also, not your problem. like I can take care of it. So he gets all worked up and so concerned and stresses about things that he doesn't need to. But it makes the job all that much more entertaining.
I think Jimmy is like, to me, he's like an iceberg. I think that most people are, and that you really only see what's going on the surface to some extent. But Jimmy's one of those people that both when he's performing and both when you're just having a conversation with him, you can actually see him thinking. You can see wheels turning, and I know that every word that comes out of his mouth is probably 1/1,000,000th of what he's thinking and what's going on inside his head. So I wish I could cut it open, Jimmy, and just see what's inside of it. We'd all benefit from it.
Jimmy is a great boss, probably the best boss. And he sings every morning when I come in through the door. He's very encouraging. He also sings the theme song to the podcast while he's walking around during the day. But he'll say Lauren's name or my name in place of his own name. And one of my favorite parts of working for Jimmy is when he has to call someone, like a potential guest or someone famous. And he'll be like, to me and Lauren, he'll be like, I need a lot of support here, you guys. And then we just sit in the room with him and our energy supports him, and that's funny.
And then we're going to go to you, Dan. Okay. What am I really like?
Oh, man. Well, I came on Improv Nerd in March, and all right, well, I'll just break down a typical day in the Improv Nerd set. Jimmy walks in with his fur coat on. He's got the sunglasses on. He's got to have 38 degree temperature water waiting for him in the back room. We have to set everything up. And then only when we have everything set up is when he can come on. And then the lights can't be too bright or else, you know, it's, that's really what he's like to me, I think. You're a star, you know, and you know it. And so, that's my opinion, I think.
Are you surprised that I'm talking to you right now?
Yeah,
because
I was actually
one thing, when I walk in, I don't talk to anybody.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, if we could make maybe some eye contact throughout today's show, that would be great. But other than that, I was honored to be a part of this, and I thank you for bringing me on to, you know, produce everything as well. And it's been really fun.
Great. And Lauren, this is, it almost seems like a trick question to ask my wife this. What am I really like?
Well, I think, as I've told you in person, I mean, I think that you have a lot more joy than you let on. I think you're actually happy and excited about a lot of things, but you have a persona that's, I'm miserable, you know? And I think you don't have words for the word excitement. And so in your head, when you ask, when you're really excited, you just say that you're afraid. So if you're listening out there, I think a lot of Jimmy's woe is me is a big act.
Well, more of the recent episodes, too, of Improv Nerd. You know, one of them challenged, who was it? Challenged you to be joyful. In like
I can't remember which one that was.
Well, several ones.
But like the last few, like even like Jack Bronis.
Which we haven't run yet, but yes.
Oh, right.
But we can talk about it.
You kind of brought that up. Mm-hmm. And like you talk about being joyful and stuff like that, and then he challenged you, and then, I mean, I guess they'll find out what happens. But, you know, I kind of believe that. So that was, yeah.
Any predictions for 2015 with Improv Nerd?
There are a few things that we've all talked about. And
oh, it's going big, man.
Yeah, we're going to try to see what we can do. But, you know, I mean, we finally kind of got like the video stuff in order, and I'll have all those done. And by the time this goes up, hopefully, but you know, at the end of the year. So that'll be something we can work on, and got like the big glasses, and I don't know. I think just as long as we keep getting different guests, and I think we got a good team.
Great team.
Of people, yeah.
Great team.
So one more thing, because we got to wrap this up. What's one more thing? What's one thing you would advise, one piece of advice you'd give to an improviser starting off today?
I would say that you're going to be faced with so many insecurities, so much rejection, so many comparisons. You know, you started out with a class with somebody and now they're on a Herald team and you're not, or they'll move to New York or LA. And, you know, it's very hard not to be into self-pity and, you know, why isn't it me? I would suggest an improviser today put as much energy as you put into your shows, your rehearsals, and your classes. It's to get emotional support. Get a group of people that can support you. If that means you got to get a therapist, that means you got to find a support group, that's what I would do, because it's really competitive out there. And if you want to go to the next level, and even if even not the next level, you really need support.
Yeah. It's a good call.
And there you have it, another year of Improv Nerd that is in the can. And I just want to thank everybody who was a part of this episode, from Dan Schiffmacher, Lauren Corain, Chloe Fitzpatrick, Sam Bowers, Taylor Overstreet. And I love their honesty. And I want to say their assessment of what I'm really like, they are right on. I am an iceberg. Yes, I am. I'm a total iceberg. And I'm also an Eeyore in an iceberg. So that's what I'm getting for Christmas. Anyways, I want to thank Dan Schiffmacher for really doing a great job of putting this together. He did a great, great job, and just a great job of producing all year round. I want to thank Chloe Fitzpatrick, my assistant, and she also stepped in and produced some of these episodes this year. I want to thank Stage 773, our home base, the people that make us, treat us like such rock stars and make us look good, of course. I want to thank my wife, Lauren Corain, for everything, keeping us on schedule, the blog, editing the blog, everything. I couldn't do it without her. Sam Bowers for stepping in and doing a great job of directing this year. And Justin Hamby for doing an awesome job of warming a warm-up act before each live version of Improv Nerd. Taylor Overstreet for being on the street team. Oh my God, how could we forget Jesse Kunath for taking these great pictures that appear everywhere. And finally, let's not forget our interns, Joshua Phillips, and Wes Humphreys for stepping up and doing a great job interning for Improv Nerd this season. As you know, we are on Facebook. We have a fan page, so go to Improv Nerd and like us. Also, follow us on Twitter, Improv_Nerd, and our YouTube channel, where you get to actually see video clips of the Improv Nerd podcast. We're on Feral Audio, so check out feralaudio.com and check out our Improv, My Improv blog, and the Artist Low Comedy classes. Just go to jimmycorain.com. For any more information about me, Jimmy Corain, go to jimmycorain.com. I want to thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. And he's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I help people. She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My